Hello and welcome to Betfair's Wade In podcast. We are recording this bright and early, 8 a.m. on Monday morning after a pretty quiet racing weekend in terms of the action on the track, which means that this show is actually going to be heavily skewed towards an awful lot of talking points, and I get to run through them all with Kevin Blake and Brendan Duke. Let's check in. Give me an anecdote from the weekend, Kevin. How have you been? What have you been up to?
Anecdote. No, I haven't done much. It's actually Jessica Harrington's on Monday morning, would you believe? As a tag along with my wife, who is involved in a syndicate there. So I was tagging along on Saturday and yesterday with some pals, with some young children over yesterday. So that was that brings its own challenges and joys, Vanessa. So that was my weekend.
Well, actually, you mentioned young children. I went to a show, like a horse show, which I won't be doing again anytime soon. Shocking experience. It's one of those situations, Brendan, where, there's loads of mothers sort of shouting at the likes of Bianca to put more scrunchies in their hair. Do you know the types that mean?
Well, indeed, yeah. The Gymkhana, it all goes on at the Gymkhana. They're the future, though, Vanessa.
Are they?
Apparently so, yeah.
Well, they'll probably be deeply soured by the whole, pursuit by the time they're 14 once their mothers are finished with them.
if that's the future, I don't want anything to do with it.
Well, that's what Larkin says, isn't it? They fuck you up, your parents do. They don't mean to, but they do. But we can all just blame our parents for everything. Just get on with it. Suck it up. Come on.
Brendan, everybody knows childhood trauma is the answer to everything in therapy. Childhood trauma. Yeah. Brendan, what about your weekend? Were you racing? Go to Nace?
No, I wasn't. I probably could have got to Nace, but a slight wrinkle. I'm doing extended doggy daycare for the weekend just because of a slight medical issue with one of my nieces. So I probably should have still made it to Nace, but I just couldn't work it out. It was cold and it was wet as well, so I went out.
You would have enjoyed it, Brendan. There was some good action post racing for all the action on the track. There was quite a bit of action off the track as well. Yeah, which we might touch on as we go.
Okay.
Yeah.
We can look forward to that then. Before we go any further, don't forget Rachel Blackmore's Serial Winners Fund is still at 205,000, but it's ahead of a big weekend, essentially. Fairy House, obviously, this coming weekend. So hopefully there will be some coffers added to the pot there. And of course, building all the time to Aintree and the funds. Why are you laughing?
Some coffers added to the pot.
Is that not the same?
The coffers and the potter, essentially the same thing, I'd imagine. You'd add some funds to the coffers and add some funds to the pot.
You are joking me.
I think that Brendan might know better than me now, but
that's joking.
Be my
I thought the coffers were the thing you put in the pot.
Coppers. Coppers. You put some coppers in the pot.
Oh, that
might
shocker.
Be what you're looking
that's
for. Another Vanessa-ism. We love them. I'm here
What's
for them.
What's wrong with me? Let's just move on. As I said, not much in the race review. We had a bit of action, obviously, over at Doncaster, started the flat turf season.
The Lincoln, Vanessa.
Sorry. But there are a few movers in terms of Guineas markets, which, of course, will be the first classic of the season that we will be building to on this show. And one of those market movers, Kev, was Knight Raider, who is now 2 from 2 at Southall for the Carl Burke operation. Don't let the track delude you, listeners and viewers out there, because this horse has a big reputation. He's obviously just, taken a little while to get to the track, but he's had this sort of winter campaign. And, I mean, he couldn't have been more impressive, Kev, when we saw him for the Burke team.
Yeah. Look, if this horse passed you by, it's worth catching up on him. He made his debut there back in the middle of December at Southall, and like he's a proper horse. Like, he's by Dark Angel. He's a half brother to Far Above. Young sire having his first runners this year, and like, he was deeply impressive at Southall in December. Like, he won by half the track. He was really strong on the clock. And he had a little freshen up, made his comeback here back at Southall. And again, like, he was very good. Same again, travelled, quickened, hammered a horse rated 93, would have brought his rating up into the hundreds for sure. And because these races were run at Southall, we get the full data lowdown on them with TPD And like he's broken 11 seconds for his penultimate furlong both days. There's a lot of interesting things to pull out of him. Now, look, it'll be a different story for him the next day. He'll be on turf. He'll be in a classic trial, most likely. But I wouldn't sleep on him. I'd say he's a pretty smart horse now. Can he win the 2,000 guineas? You know, clearly he has a way to go, but he's in the conversation. And yeah, I wouldn't want to be too dismissive of him when it comes to a classic trial next time.
Well,
funny enough,
14 to 1.
I mean, I can see it. He sort of fits in with Ghost Rider, another highly impressive unbeaten sort. But funny enough, Burke did an interview afterwards, and they said that to him. Well, he'd go for a classic trial, and he said, "Oh, I don't really. I'm not sure I want him to go a mile at this stage. We might just go for a piece of work." But the horse has Burke didn't even know if the horse had ever worked on grass. He certainly hasn't worked on grass this spring. Understandably, it's probably all mud. He said he might have done as a 2-year-old. So, I mean, I don't know. He's a really good action horse. He's a lovely mover. Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't want to risk him on soft ground. But he could go to the guineas just off the back of 2 all-weather runs, which would be a cause for some concern, would it?
Yeah,
I wouldn't. Like Newmarket in particular as well. Like Newmarket's tricky. You know, fast ground down at the dip. That'll test young horses that have had plenty of turf experience. So that would be tough. There's some question mark over him getting a mile. I think he'll get the mile. Looking at that aforementioned data there, stride data, etc. He strides like a miler. So I think he'll be fine. Now, will he get much further? I don't know. But I wouldn't mind his stamina for a mile. For all that, there's obviously loads of speed high up on his page. I think he'll be okay.
Now, we should just mention that, of course, he runs in the Clipper Logistics colours, Kev. And they've been in the news essentially this week because, of course, Clipper Logistics and that team, Steve Parkin, for 20 years have used Joe Foley's services as a bloodstock agent. Joe's also stood their stallions for them as well in Ireland at that side of the operation. But they have gone their separate ways, Kev. It's quite a high-profile bloodstock split because, of course, Joe Foley has brought some very, very decent horses for this team, and none more so than the team going into this spring, really.
Yeah, like this was huge news. Now, sad news as well. I mean, you'd never like to see kind of real long-standing partnerships like this, really successful partnerships, come to an end. Joe Foley, he keeps his head down on the race course. If you're just a racing follower, you might not know loads about Joe Foley, but if you're in the bloodstock business, you would know Joe Foley. Top man, owns Ballyhane Stud. You know, stood Danny Man up until his passing there last year, amongst many others. And like Joe's just a real head honcho in the industry. He's involved in everything, you know, EBF and ITBA, and you know, he was one of the main brains behind putting together Irish Champions Weekend, actually. And he's a real top man. And himself and Steve Parkin had a brilliant partnership. And it's sad. It's just one of those you thought would last forever. And like Steve Parkin has been doing unbelievable things in racing. You know, you only have to watch him at the race course to see how passionate he is. Recently, you know, commenced his own stallion farm operation in Newmarket, Dullingham Park. He's clearly in it for the long run. And given how long himself and Joe had been joined at the hip in the game, it was really sad to see. Came very suddenly, like two stallions, Asymmetric I forget the other one for the minute. Have been moved from Ballyhane to Space Traveller. Have been moved from Ballyhane to Starfield Stud, like right in the middle of the season. Very disruptive. Like things were obviously came to a very serious head. It's sad to see, but look, the two will move forward, I'm sure, in their own directions. And there we go. Sad to see it.
Yeah, it is, like you say, when those like long-standing partnerships, they're few and far between. So when they do go their separate ways, it feels a bit sad. And they've had such success as well. Whilst we're just on the topic of guineas horses, we should just give a mention, Brendan, to Purple Lily, who won at Nace on Sunday, beating the boys in one of those 3-year-old races for the Paddy Toomey operation, another one who's 2 from 2 currently. Obviously, she'll need to step forward. How taken were you with this? She's been cut for the 1,000 guineas, but it looks as though the Irish guineas might be more on her agenda than the English version.
Yes, excuse me. The rise of Paddy Toomey continues. He did an interview afterwards, fair play, and he said we'd probably go for a Guineas trial and then on to the Irish Guineas, as you say. So maybe she'll rock up in Leopardstown. Again, a very impressive performance. As impressive, she was good in Galway, a bit green early. Once the penny dropped, she ran on really strongly, and that form has worked out pretty well. The third went on to be placed in a stakes race. And I mean, if I suppose people were probably looking at the race on Sunday and saying, well, Portland 108's a flattering mark. I can see that. But still, to send this filly off 10 to 11, there was obviously a lot of confidence behind her. And again, she was so strong at the line over a mile, which when you look at her pedigree, I mean, she's by Calix, of an approved mare. And after the race, Toomey's talking about, Billy Lee said, well, she'd be an ideal one for the Pretty Polly. She's in the Irish Oaks. I mean, it's hard to believe she could stay those kind of trips on pedigree, but on run style, she's very exciting. So she's an awful lot of speed. And she does have seem to have stamina. An interesting one for Calix, I suppose. You would probably say that his 2 year olds were a little underwhelming last year, but he might have a right good filly here, and of course, dependent on whether she's as effective on better ground. But I mean, is it ever going to stop
Brendan,
raining, Nessa?
I
Maybe
don't
you
know, but
want to.
Brendan, we won't be saying that. Thank you very much about Calix on this show because
No.
I'm involved in a Calix filly pinhook, so none of that chat. Thank you.
No, he's actually doing all
Nothing's
right. I tell you that
definite.
there's a few there's plenty of good judges now that are quite. I would be happy with his stats as well now. I think
Oh,
he's on
thank you. Thank you, Kevin.
I
Thank
think
you.
he's, and I'm not just saying it for you now, Vanessa, but I do think he's on the, I do think he's very much on the right side of the middle line. But look, like with all of them, of course, what happens this year will be key, not just for him, but for you as well, Vanessa, clearly.
Yeah, very much so. Can I just ask Kev, is that Philippa, is she owned by Purple Lily? Is she owned by somebody who would be selling? Because I mean, her price would be pretty sky high right now, wouldn't she? Is that, I can't remember those, I don't recognize those colors.
No, but she did cost a right few quid as a breezer. She was 155 grand. So, look, at she would have been worth, well more than that after her maiden alone. So, look, I'm sure there'll be offers. I don't know if they're sellers, to be perfectly frank.
Okay.
But after this, like she'll get a fair old rating for this. Now the handicapper can kind of go can kind of go as mad as he wants, given that the runner up was rated 108. Do I think he's run to that? No. But it's a slight stick your finger in the air effort. But one thing I'd say about her, I'd say she would always appreciate a good ease in the ground with her action. And I saw her at Galway last year as well, and she might just appreciate an ease. And I'd say that might be some of the thinking in Paddy favouring the current rather than Newmarket. But look,
Okay.
we'll see. Is it ever going to stop raining? I don't know, but I'd say to be happy enough to make hay for the minute while there is a good ease on the ground. But
Yeah, well,
she was impressed. She was impressive.
that question about is it ever going to stop raining? Apparently not this week in England anyway, which is very disappointing. Let's cover a few other racing results. Ammo Racing, excellent start to the season for them, but I suppose more importantly, really, for David Egan. Obviously, winning the Lincoln on Mr. Professor for his new boss. Pretty important result, huge price. Brendan, we did not mention him on Racing Only Better, unfortunately, but
No.
you did say that you sort of could pick out 10 winners. Was he on your 10 short?
No. Well, exactly. I was only thinking about that. How bad is George Amai? I would have, if I was having a go, would have picked 10 horses, and he wouldn't have been one of them. Remarkable horse, started off in handicaps off 69 and has now gone and won a Lincoln off a mark in the low 90s. So, I mean, that was probably his big day in the sun. But yeah, I mean, if that's all you do, win a Lincoln. That's something of a storied career. And David Egan, yeah. I mean, his boss is obviously a very a tricky man, but he's come over to Ireland and wrote the first 2 year old winner of the season. He's wrote the Lincoln winner. Who knows what goes on in the mind of Ciaran Donnelly? But surely he's relatively content at this stage. He could be fired next week, David Egan, for all I know. I mean, he is a fascinating man. I mean, I remember we were talking about it for some reason last year, and I looked at his Wikipedia page, and his father had made money in Iran, but had to leave when the Shah was deposed. and then he made some money early in his career, Kiev, and he might be connected to Boris Berezovsky, the oligarch. And he's not a football agent, he's a football advisor. So he's a guy who likes to keep people guessing. This seems to be part of his MO, and he's doing a very good job with that. So David Egan has responded to the pressure of this job, and long may he reign.
Yeah, and I think David, like knowing David a bit, like I think he's kind of well armed in terms of his own temperament for this job. Okay. Like I don't think this job would suit a stressy fella. because it probably is a little bit chaotic, and we know from Kia and the way the operation has moved in the past that they can be quite you know, things can change. But I think David has a really good temperament, and that'll be an asset to him in this. But look, it's made a great start. The team finished third in the Irish Lincoln, went and won the Lincoln. And that 2-year-old looks smart as well. And actually, I suppose we should just say as well, the first 2-year-old winner at the Curra was trained by Adrian Murray. Lincoln winner was trained by Dominic French Davis. I suppose these operations come with their own explanation needed as well. Because look, if you're not familiar, like Robson Aguirre has been the most consistent part of the AMO team from the get-go, really. He's a Brazilian chap. He worked in Ballydoyle for quite some time, moved into the Breeze Ups, and formed this real tight association with Kia. And like pretty much all the AMO horses would be in Robson's yard up in Westmead, like up until pretty soon, until they run, you know, like he would have recently had all the big high profile ones that are going to back to Roger Vere and what have you. And like these horses, I'd imagine would have been in his yard until very late in the day. That's the way they operate. That's the way they do it. The kind of the long standing assumption will be that Robson will take out a trainer's license in his own name at some stage. But it hasn't happened yet. But that's the way they do it. It's a little bit different, but they're getting results at the minute.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a full team behind them, isn't there? Whilst we're on the topic of Lincolns, obviously Chasme attempted the Irish Lincoln double, because I'm not allowed to say UK Lincoln because that's what Brendan shouted at me for. But Kev, you had a bit of a backstory that you were willing to put forward, were you, on the show in regards to Chasme and the Stacks?
Yeah. Look, the Irish Lincoln's been a great race for the Stacks. They've won it a bunch of times over the years with some super horses, going back a long way, going back to Tommy's time, obviously, and now on to Fozzie's time. But I just got the feeling that this one gave him particular pleasure because of a connection, and it's been flagged up elsewhere now. But Chas Esme was bred by Barney Curley, who, if you've read Barney Curley's book, his first one, you know, he would have talked a lot about his kind of long-standing friendship with Tommy Stack going back years and years, and he would have spent plenty of time around this neck of the woods. So, you know, Fozzie Stack's yard is 5 minutes away from here. And I just sensed in Fozzie now post race that it was catching him a little bit in emotional terms, because Barney obviously passed a couple of years ago now, and I'm sure he would have been looking down now, seeing this fella going off the well back three to one favourite in the Irish Lincoln and winning at his ease, and would have been a pleasurable one. And 20 years to the day since Talpuddle won the Irish Lincoln for the Stacks, owned by Patsy Byrne, who was another man very closely affiliated with Barney Curley and all that. So the wheel turns.
Isn't there a great story about this Chas's meet, that Barney had left money in his will to back this horse from beyond the grave?
And I've heard the story. I don't know if it's true.
he was definitely punted from, was it 20s to 3s on debut in Dundalk. How unlucky were they that day? He went wrong coming out of the stalls.
Yeah,
right?
broke his pelvis. Coming out of the stalls. Oh, Christ.
But, I mean, what a pure gambler would you have to be to say, right, yeah, well, I know this is going to win. I'm not going to be around, but get me on. Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, the horse is actually very closely related to one of the horses that made up his famous four timer. Was it I Had a Tiger, possibly? Yeah, Eye of the Tiger, that was one of the four, one of the ones that won. Yeah, so closely related. So that was an element to it as well. But the horse has had a fair story. Like that obviously went horrendously wrong on his first big day. He won a couple of times. They sent him over to America to run in a stakes race, and I think he got a stone bruise or something over there, and he couldn't run. And then they sent him out again, and he got stuck in an airport somewhere, and he couldn't run. And they've had a fair old bit of bad luck with him now. But you go and you win the Irish Lincoln, that cheers things up a fair bit. And I'll mention while I mentioned him, Talpuddle, that won the Lincoln 20 years ago. He's actually still with the Stacks. He lives in a field down the road from here. I only went in to see him a year or so ago. I put a video up on Twitter, so that they're still looking after him like a king. So that's great to see as well.
I love it. I love it. And Brendan, if that story is or isn't true, we just love it anyway. You know, what's the saying?
Yeah.
Don't let the truth get in the way of a good story.
Quite right.
Just covering a few other racing results from the weekend that tie in with stories, news stories. Charon winning the Doncaster Mile, went off the 2-1 favourite, all pretty straightforward for Charon. But more importantly, Sylvester D'Souza, Brendan, back obviously from the ban that he got when riding out in Hong Kong, back in the UK now, very much a freelancer, gonna ride for anyone and everyone, and starting out with a nice listed victory is a good way. Well, he's been riding on the all weather, but first big winner back, and hopefully he'll have a profitable summer now.
Well, indeed, big race on ITV on a Saturday for a high profile stable. What a way to advertise your wares. And I mean, it's never easy for freelancers, what freelancers should I say, when it comes to the bigger races, because a lot of the rides are locked up. But I mean, when he was champion jockey in the UK, he was riding as a freelance as far as I can remember, and he made that pay. So I'd say he's going to ride plenty of winners. Obviously, no issue with his weight. He's a proven performer, former champion jockey. He says he's willing to go anywhere and everywhere. And I mean, he's a resilient fella. I mean, as far as I remember, he came over to work for Dermot Weld as a work rider, and he built that and built that all the way into becoming champion jockey. Things went wrong in Hong Kong, but I mean, it is easy to dirty your bib over there. He made a mistake. Now he's back. I don't think it'll be held against him. There's a very different attitude to betting breaches in the UK than in Hong Kong. So I don't think his reputation is sullied or anything. So I'd expect him to ride plenty of winners.
Whilst just slightly off topic, but just because I caught the results page and thought I must mention it. Kev, did you see the ride? Well, you will have done. Kieran Fallon gave that Montasip. I thought that, like, I know it got plenty of attention, but rightly so. You know, the lad back from an injury, riding like that, he's had plenty of time off the track, and then he gives one a ride like that. I just thought it's a real sign of like top class. I know we already know this about Kieran Fallon Jr., but he's destined for really big things, isn't he?
No, I hope so, Vanessa, because like he's a really interesting story, because like he has the pedigree he has, but like he was very, very late, taking an interest and getting into it. And like he made like he's a very, you see him and you can tell like he's a very natural athlete, and it came to him very quickly, and he got a lot of success very quickly. And then he took the job as second jockey to Guitar Racing. And I'd say with hindsight, it didn't work out. It didn't work out. Like Oisin, very much number one. Guitar, maybe not the power in terms of numerical power that it
Yeah, I
looked
mean,
like it
what
might
happened there
grow
is like
into.
I would witness it loads. Like he would be sent up to ride like one at some much smaller track, obviously for his retained owners. When you know it didn't have much of a chance there, as you say, not so much of a big operation specifically over here in the UK anymore. You know, their numbers haven't expanded to say the least, and so then obviously he's missing rides that he would have got, you know, somewhere else potentially. It just did, like you say, it just didn't really click for him.
Yeah, and when Oisin was off, it's not like he kind of slotted in and was given the big chances either, So like you look at his list of big race wins, and it just, he won the July Cup, nearly 4 years ago now, and it just on Oxted, and it just stalled a little bit for him. And I'm sure it was character building, etc. And then now he's had that injury, and you just, I think and hope it could be a very good season for him, because that arrangement with Qatar has now come to an end. And I'm just watching him closely because I think that there's an awful lot of ability in there. And while the last couple of seasons were probably a bit frustrating, look, sometimes you need a bit of hard. And I know it's all relative. Like I say, I almost said it, you need a bit of hardship to strengthen your will. Like, it's not like he wasn't riding winners; he was riding plenty of winners. But I think he can roar on now, and hopefully, if he gets the opportunities, I'm sure he'll be able to drive on and lift everything up even more.
Okay, let's cover some talking points, shall we then? Some further talking points. But whilst we're on the topic of jockeys, let's bounce on to Ben Cohen. Ben Cohen at Wolverhampton. Ben Cohen, the same Ben Cohen who rode 55 winners last year over in Ireland. But he managed to ride in the rider restricted card at Wolverhampton that's meant for jockeys who have ridden less than 30 winners in the calendar year. But he was eligible because obviously his wins have come in Ireland and not over here in the UK. And so he saw that loophole, or people around him did, including, I think, his agent, Kevin O'Ryan, wasn't it? And they got him booked on a whole host of ride, and he had a couple of winners and loads of placed horses. It's a loophole, apparently, that Brendan, the BHA, knew was there, knew could be utilised, but decided to wait until someone saw it, used it, took advantage of it before they make a change. Do you think lessons will have been learned?
Well, it does seem strange. But it's hard to believe that they did see. I mean, the only thing I can think of is that they wanted to leave the option open, maybe for someone who's coming from a jurisdiction like, I don't know, India, or a lower profile race, and they didn't want to say, oh, well, you can't ride in this race because you've ridden so many winners. But it's just like, as you say, if there's a loophole, there's always going to be someone who will spot the loophole.
Probably an Irish fella as well.
Yeah.
Bloody Irish dominance, can't get rid of it.
Yeah,
but Kevin O'Ryan can't actually claim it, because I texted him going, say, that was you, fair play. It was actually Nick Bell, and well, Kevin, fair play to me, said it as much. Nick Bell spotted it and made the call. And look, it was a great bit of loopholery, but like, I think the BHA will have to close it now, because I actually really like this idea. Like, we don't have cards like this in Ireland. We have races like this in Ireland that are restricted to riders, and they brought them in for trainers even that have had less than X number of winners in the last year or whatever. I think they're a great idea. In the UK in particular, I think they'll work really well. I know when we talked about the controversial Sunday evening racing, like, it was my, I'd have a strong view that they should be putting on these cards on Sunday evenings, because, you know, the lads that ride in these cards, Ben Cohen et al. Accepted, will really appreciate the opportunities, and they, I suspect, won't mind engaging with Sunday evening racing, as some of the more, as some of the busier jockeys will and would. So, like, I like this sort of thing. Like, it's a bit embarrassing, no doubt. And thankfully, Ben didn't go through the card. He did ride a few winners. But look, lessons will be learned. They will make adjustments. And I'd love to see more of these type of cards, and maybe for trainers as well. Maybe more so in National Hunt Racing. But I think this type of thing is a good addition.
Brendan, your favourite saying is lessons will be learned. What's your biggest life lesson that you've learned?
Oh, God.
That is a huge question. That's an existential question. I think like a lot of people in my, say, mid to late teens and early 20s, I worried what people thought about me. And then once you realise, don't worry what people think about it. Just be yourself. That's a life lesson to learn. But I mean, it's easy to say that when I often think Mae West has a saying, and she said, keep a diary and one day your diary will keep you. And I think that's great advice, because I'd like to remember, I feel like I was quite tormented in my late teens into early 20s. And then suddenly... but I didn't write anything down. If I had it on, I could go back over it and perhaps tell you what life lessons I've learned. But I'm now much more relaxed about everything.
Brendan. What about you, Kev? Go on, whilst we're on the topic, slight side step here.
Oh, Yeah, I think that's getting older, isn't it? The older you get, the less you care about what other people think,
Yeah,
which I think is generally a good approach, especially in this magnificent social media age where you'll get it very direct onto your telephone if someone's not happy. But yeah, I think that's pretty solid advice. Someone gave me a someone important gave me a good expression a couple of years ago, and it's very simple: the road is long.
yeah.
And it's more profound than it sounds, but when you think about it, after naming a 2-year-old, the road is long, literally a few days ago. So that's in my
Oh,
head. So there you go.
I love that. I love that. My lesson that has been learned. I mean, the BHA are learning them lessons left, right, and center. But in terms of my lesson that has been learned, my favorite saying anyway is, well, there's two, but comparison is the thief of joy. That's the big one. Like, you've got to stop comparing yourself to others because it'll
Another
ruin
one for the
you.
social media age, isn't it?
Yeah,
Instagram
exactly.
life.
Right. We have done a sidestep there. Should we get back on track? I tell you, comparison is the thief of joy, and Richard Newland could learn that actually.
Oh,
Let's talk about Richard Newland. In all seriousness, he is obviously, I mean, many of you will have read the article by now and seen the social media reaction to said articles on Racing TV website, penned by Richard Newland, Dr. Richard Newland, all about Irish dominance essentially, and how the fact that the British national hunt scene is in crisis, which lots of people would not agree with, but lots of people have disagreed with things he said in the article. Obviously, in said article, topics he kind of leans on is some of it towards the anti-doping procedures the British have had in and around the Irish runners. He touches upon that, and then some of the ideas that he voices includes suggesting an option just simply not to allow Irish trained runners in the UK, making lots of races non-eligible. Well, the majority of races, except maybe the Cheltenham Festival, or maybe Irish trainers only allowing one runner per race at the festival, not coming over and winning races every Saturday. He also suggests Horse Racing Ireland should contribute £10 million to UK horse racing prize money. Oh, and there's also a suggestion in there to charge higher entry fees for international runners to address a funding issue. Kevin, you've got your head in your hands here. I know you have plenty to say on this. Look, he was given a platform to voice some ideas. It's gone down pretty badly, it's fair to say. And I suppose my only, look, do I agree with any of those suggestions? No. But I also disagree with people having a go at somebody for voicing ideas. You know, like, we should be able to suggest things and not be told that he's an idiot, because he's clearly not an idiot, even if you don't agree with what he said here, Kev.
Look, he's definitely not an idiot, but these are quite idiotic ideas, and I don't know if the defense of I was trying to start a conversation is all that effective, when you put out something like this that's just so mad and so unworkable and just riddled with unintended consequences and completely unworkable suggestions. And look, Richard Newland went on Look on Sunday yesterday, and you could tell that he was probably quite taken aback by the wave of negativity that came his way after this, and he backed away from some of the more serious insinuations he made. Like some of the language in this was really inflammatory, I thought. Like talking about the Irish inverted commas advantage. We all wish we had Willie's magic wand. It left a bad taste, and look, we try not to get upset or offended by things, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if some of the people, if they're, if you're of a mind to get offended, this would have offended you. But look, it is what it is. A lot of it is completely unworkable. Like in terms of looking for 10 million quid off HRI, it's just in the it's if it was satire, it would make you laugh, And look, this isn't Dr. Newland's first rodeo now on this type of thing, and it's not just a national hunt racing thing. Those with long memories, I certainly remember it, and I know a bunch of Irish trainers remember it. He came out strongly not so long ago, suggesting that Irish trained handicappers shouldn't be allowed to run in, I think it was Class 5 and Class 6 handicaps, because there was a ban and some minor ongoing restrictions about Irish runners in those races, and I think he wanted to do away with them altogether. I'm trying to find the article to that just as we're speaking. I can't find it, but it did happen. So this is kind of, there have been other things with Richard Newland there as well, that would have been in the news over the years with regard to so you know, again, anti-doping side of things. So this is a long-standing thing. It's not just something that I bought from the blue. And look at it, it's quite rightly been, and it's been countered strongly, not just from Ireland but from England as well. Like, I have a bunch of pals and racing professionals in England, trainers, etc., and they're just mortified by the whole thing because it just seems so Little Britain, so Brexit, so defeatist, you know. That, you know, there's plenty of people involved in national hunt racing in the UK that do want to fight back on the playing field as it stands, and try to get things back around without, you know, interventions such as is suggested here. But look, it certainly started the conversation. It was the racing TV website will never get more clicks into an article for as long as they're around, I'd say. But just it left a bit of a sour taste if you took it seriously. Otherwise, it generated some quality memes, if nothing else.
Brendan, from your point of view, was there anything in the article that you thought was valid or sort of relatively interesting in terms of suggestions, or were you kind of more of Kevin's view?
Well, I thought what he said was valid about the Irish trainers taking over UK racing, and that it's not just going to be confined to Cheltenham. And I do think that we saw with Gavin Cromwell and Emmett Mullins this year, I think we were only talking about the Adonis Hurdle. The prize money for that's gone up to 50 grand or something. Like, there's some serious dough on these Saturdays in England. And I just think that the Irish trainers, particularly those who are trying to work around Willie Mullins, are going to say, well, the serious gold across the water, where we seem to be able to pick up these races with horses who can't necessarily win graded races in Ireland. So there might be, I take his point that it's probably going to get worse before it gets better. But it's just that, protectionism generally is not a good idea. And particularly when you're dealing with a sport where only three countries play. I mean, and really the French don't travel all that much, do they? So it's only two countries. So if you were then to decide, well, we're not going to let the Irish come over. Well, I mean, arguably the Dublin Racing Festival was a more competitive spectacle than the Cheltenham Racing Festival this year. And that would only get worse. So essentially Cheltenham and UK National Hunt Racing would just dissolve into irrelevance. So while he does have a valid point about the Irish dominance, I certainly don't think that's the solution. And then it was just the tone of it. I mean, he said, as Kevin rightly says, he came on Nick Luck's Sunday show and said, oh, I don't think this is a doping issue. But there was definitely an undertone to it about, well, we don't know what this Irish advantage is, but I know that the BHA went over and did 120 tests pre-Cheltenham. I thought actually there was a guy, because not the Sunday show, Nick Luck's Daily Show, there was an Australian fellow who works for the BHA.
Brant Dunshay.
Brant Dunshay, very impressive. Well, I'd like to talk to him because he was saying how he's really thinks things are going well in terms of different jurisdictions liaising one another, not just Ireland and the UK, but whenever horses are travelling into different jurisdictions. And he made an interesting point about that they tried to assess how concerned they are about drugs in those particular jurisdictions. So I'd love to ask him about the Japanese, because we always talk about what a coming force the Japanese are in world racing. And you can imagine what joy that is to me, because the people who I meet at the races say, oh, it's all bent, it's all drugs. And then I say to them, well, the Japanese don't even let the horses take drugs in jurisdictions where they're allowed to take drugs. They say, don't be going over to America and coming back here with any of that smack. That's how seriously they take it. And yet they are arguably the dominant force in world racing. So I'd like to talk to him about, do they even bother testing the Japanese horses? Mm. But that's an aside. Basically, I don't think there was a lot of merit in the article, and I didn't like the undertone that perhaps it's doping that is the reason the Irish are so successful, although he did row back on that.
Something
that should be said there is, and Brent Dunshay detailed this better than I will, but like that sort of inter-jurisdiction testing procedures, like they've been there for years and years. Like the BHA have been coming over here testing Cheltenham horses for many, many years. The dope testing standards in the UK and Ireland would be identical. You know, the samples are all analysed in the same lab in Newmarket.
Yeah.
There actually would have been a greater level of post race dope testing in Ireland. I'm not sure if it's still the case, but I know for a long time in the UK, not every winner was tested. That there were some that weren't. That may have been rectified since, and I'll happy to clarify if that has changed. But I know it's been the case in Ireland for a long, long time. And there's always scope to do these things better, and I think they are getting better. And there's much more out of competition testing being done now. But if you were of a view that doping is a problem in Irish racing, you'd have to be absolutely cracked to think that it isn't an issue in British racing as well. I happen to take the view that it's not a big issue in either, but because the standards are so similar and the samples are tested in the same lab and there's so much interconnection between the two industries, if it's an issue in one, you can be absolute lock certain that it's an issue in both. You know, to cast it as something's going on in one country and not the other, you know, would be pretty naive if there is any sort of level of anything going on in either, which, you know, we can only be guided by what they find. And they haven't been tending to find a whole lot in recent years.
Okay, let's move on because we've got a few other topics to cover, please. Obviously, flat season kicking off, Kev, will ramp up in the next few weeks. You were at Aidan O'Brien's press morning. Obviously, you've written a stable tour for the At The Races website, but we know how good you are at seeing Gordon's glint. What about Aidan's? Did you pick up any nuggets that you can share exclusively on this show?
Well, look, it's all there on paper now, but like we always say, you know, sometimes it's the way things are said that can reveal more than the words themselves. And I didn't see anyone else pick up on it now, but I thought when he was talking about Ocean of Dreams, I did see a bit, I don't know, like Gordon's glint rolls off the tongue, lovely. I don't know, we'll have to come up with an equivalent for Aidan. But I was a little bit taken with the way he spoke about Ocean of Dreams. He's a horse you might not be familiar with unless you follow it closely. We've only seen him once. He's by Fastnet Rock. He's from the family of the Great Urban Sea. And he made a winning debut at Leopardstown in October on bad ground. And he wouldn't be at all a bad ground type of colt, I'd say. And if you're of a mind to have a wee wager based on such things as Gordon's glints and Aidan's ear catching tone, Ocean it doesn't roll off the tongue, does it? Ocean of Dreams might be worth a couple of shekels for the Derby, perhaps. I think it sounds like he's going to be steered towards the Derby trial and. Yeah, I did. There wasn't loads now. He was keeping it, his cards were close to his chest, but I did sense something with Ocean of Dreams. So there you go. Okay. We'll see how good my read of Aidan is now in the fullness of time.
Well, he's told the lads, hasn't he? He's told the lads at Gus Road. I mean, if you're going to lead this horse of trading as a 4-year-old with me, I mean, we're going to Dubai, then we're going for the Tattersalls Gold Cup, of course, because his life work is to preserve that as a Group 1 race, and then we'll drive on to Ascot. That only takes us up to June. He's going to keep the old hood busy this season.
Yeah, he's talking about dirt as well, you know.
I love it.
Isn't it fantastic? Like you wouldn't have seen this kind of 20 or 30 years ago, would you? Like these real good ones, they just didn't come back. But I think the lads, as you call them, they're very game these days. They want to keep these horses going and enjoy them, and potentially do something remarkable with them. Which, you know, like again, City of Troy. you know, talking about potentially going to Saratoga for the Traverse Stakes on dirt.
Yeah,
you know,
but I mean, how realistic is that though? I mean, you think they're going to tear up the dirt tracks in the next 5 years? So is there any need to take that risk?
No. Yeah, it's just one of those things. That, like, if it wasn't at all on the table, I don't know what benefit there is to mentioning it. So it was kind of ear catching that that it was even mentioned. Maybe it's Brendan, you know, in a game, but it was interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting that they mentioned it. And Brendan Knowles, we're really just waiting for so that we can just reel out more quotes, is of course Henry Longfellow.
Well, indeed,
he's going to make these shows.
Henry Longfellow, who might be slightly stymied this season. Now, you're going to get plenty of chance. It looks like he's going to start in the French Guineas, and then they're saying, well, he's more of a miler. Now, physically, he does look like a miler. He's more a close couple sort, big back
he's,
side.
He's a real Dubawi, I think, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, his dam did win an Oaks at the same time, but whether he's going to get the opportunity to stretch out because they're just going to leave City of Troy to take a wrecking ball to the sort of middle distance prizes next season seems to be the plan. But I mean, you should get your chance for the French Guineas for the quotes, Irish Guineas, Ascot, and then, well, maybe he might get a chance over 10 furlongs. I suppose, there's a lot of balls in the air, isn't there, with City Troy and himself. But, we should get a few quotes out. So I hope you're working on that, Vanessa.
Yeah, just in case anyone was wondering, around that press morning, there was a lot of mention of these horses potentially going to Nace, all the Guineas horses going to Nace to work after racing. That didn't happen. They actually worked at Leopardstown the day before. Just in case anyone was wondering why there was no bulletins on these horses post-Nace. It actually happened the day before.
Well, I thought that was just going to link you beautifully to tell us what did actually happen after racing at Nace.
There was plenty of workers there. Joseph had a good bunch up there. And anyone that stuck around would have seen Al Rifa doing some very pleasing things. So
Now I'm not being funny. I just need him to deliver something. I know he's been unlucky. I know he's put in good performances. I know his form stacks up. But let's just be honest. He didn't have the season last year that the season before anticipated. So now this is his season, Kev. This is it. He's got to do something big.
It'll be worth the wait. It'll be worth the wait.
Well, he's had an
incredibly mind-blowingly frustrating season last season in that he had these two like very minor setbacks, and they just couldn't have come at precisely the worst times, the two of them. One just before the Irish 2000 Guineas, and then one like literally the day before the Irish Champion Stakes.
Now, Brendan, never mind Gordon's glint. Did you see Kevin's... Oh, I don't know what the word is. Kevin's keenness there.
Yeah, no. Just you wait, Vanessa. But I mean, I'd say he's a sight to behold. I mean, some frame to fill. I'd say as a 4-year-old, he's something of a physical phenom at this stage.
Yeah, no, you'd be right, Brent. Like he's literally 17 hands. Like how he won a Group One at two, I've absolutely no. It'd be like Usain Bolt, like winning an Olympic gold medal at 15. Like it just. You shouldn't. Anyway, we'll see. We'll let him do the talking. But
Now we've had a very jolly show, but we've got a few slightly less jolly topics to wrap up proceedings, I'm afraid. The first of which is this Luke Comer Jr. case. He has escaped a conviction in court on Friday after 9 horse carcasses were found on his land. He is donating €20,000 to the Irish Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals at Navan, but he has escaped conviction for this. But now, of course, the IHRB are also looking into this case as well. Kev, you will know an awful lot more about this Luke Comer Jr. case than I do. It doesn't read well by any stretch of the imagination.
No, shocker. Another shocker. And I suppose that it's important to, I suppose, emphasize this is Luke Comer Jr., son of Luke Comer, who has been in the news for all sorts of reasons, extremely prominent businessman in Ireland, but his affairs in racing have come to attention for the wrong reasons of late. And Luke Comer Jr., like this was a case dating back to 2021. It was led by the Department of DAFM, Department of Agriculture, Food and the Marine, where basically 9 decomposed horses were found seemingly quite close to his yard in Meath on his land. And like you just can't do this. Like I'm really struggling to compute how this happened. The details that we've been given don't really explain it. I think Luke Comer Jr. has essentially thrown his hands up in the air and couldn't explain how this happened. And it's just like I just can't compute this. Like nine dead horses is a lot of dead horses.
But nine the courts, because hence why he's escaped without a conviction. Surely, like this doesn't seem to be. Nobody seems to have any answers here.
But just as a, you know, someone that has a farm here, like I just don't understand how that happens. Really, you know, I want to know the details. I want to know, you know, how do these horses die? Why weren't they disposed of properly? Like we, you know, I have quite a few horses here, you know, and it'd be rare that you'd have a horse need to be put down or die of natural causes, what have you. And like the ultimate priority immediately is disposing of the carcass appropriately. You ring the knackery and they come and collect the unfortunate animal, and that's the end of that. You know, for them to end up tossed in a ditch somewhere. It just, I struggle to compute that. So we need to hear more about this. The courts have dealt with it. Whether they've dealt with it appropriately is a matter for the individual. But now this will move on to the next phase, because we know from previous cases, the way these things work is that when cases like this get taken into the law courts, the IHRB will sit back and wait for the courts to deal with them. The courts are now finished with them, and the IHRB, are now taking it up from their perspective, and they will consider whether any of their rules have been broken. I suspect they'll be having a very, very good look at this and potentially taking action based on their own investigations. So this won't be the last we hear this. But look, as we say again and again and again, unfortunately too much, you know, we in this business where we're dealing with animals have to keep the highest possible standards. And cases like this going into mainstream news are incredibly damaging for our sport. We know that as an industry, our bar is set so much higher than this. So when something like this happens, you know, the IHRB have to take it extremely seriously and take appropriate action. We'll let them do their own investigation. Like I said, we don't have the full details, so it would be unfair to make strong comment. But I think we would all implore them if their findings are, you know, show this in the light that it seems to have been, you know, they got to take action, because we just can't have this. We, as an industry, we just can't have this. When someone lets the side down in this sort of manner, there has to be ramification, or seems to let the side down in this manner. You know, proper action needs to be taken. So we'll reserve full comment until the IHRB finish their own investigation. But you know, deeply disappointing to see this stuff. This again, I struggle to compute this. I don't know how it's allowed to happen, and we'll see how it plays out in the fullness of time.
Yeah, I think there's going to be an awful, hopefully, actually, there will be an awful lot more to come on that case. Not that you obviously ever want to read the details of this, but as Kevin's outlined there, you know, transparency is going to be key here. And so we do need the details, however uncomfortable listening and reading they may well be. And the last, well, I mean, there's a couple of other things on the running order, but I think we are running out of time. But the last thing that we have to give a bit of time to mention is, of course, the news of Highfield Princess having lost her battle. At the vet, she's been put down following a stall accident, a stable accident, essentially. Just dreadful to hear. Obviously, so many of you will know of her career by now. She was so well campaigned, 39 runs, 14 wins, 14 placed efforts, a career high mark of 120, but more importantly, 4 Group 1s in 3 different countries. And of course, her latest Group 1 win came in the Abbey at Longchamp last October in extraordinary fashion that day, still very near the height of her powers. She had been kept in training by her owner, John Fairley, and of course, with Sean and John Quinn up in Yorkshire. Just a world-class horse for a Yorkshire-based owner breeder and a Yorkshire-based trainer in, as you say, John Quinn. And I suppose, like, I my mum would know John Fairley quite well from her working years. And he just got to witness a little bit closer, like, what this horse really meant to not just John Quinn, not just John Fairley, sorry, but also like his whole family. Like, I can't reiterate what a journey this mayor took his whole family on around the world. You know, John's been involved, John Fairley's been involved in horse racing for years, years and decades and decades. And then they get this Group One mare and she does what she did on the track and rises from that, you know, the famous sort of from the handicap ranks up to Group One level. And for her life to end like this, it just seems so unfair, Brendan. Like, it just, I know it happens and I know it's a freak accident. And I know they obviously put in all the efforts in the last week to try and save her. But you just think how cruel, like how cruel for a mare like her to go out like this.
It is unfortunate, and I mean she had an interesting pedigree as well. So it would have been, but as you say, a mare with a rating of 120 would have been interesting to see what she might have produced. But I hope the owner isn't beating himself up for taking the chance and keeping her in training. I mean, you know, that would be easy to do. But as you mentioned, I mean, what a run they had with her, particularly in the autumn of 2002 when she got those three group ones, and then she won an Abbe since, placed twice in a week at Royal Ascot. I mean, they've had some lunches around the world. Mm. Hong Kong, Breeders' Cup. They could write a book on racing lunches around the globe. So yes, very, very unfortunate ending. Doesn't seem fair, but a hell of a ride.
Yeah, and it's just one of those things as well, Vanessa, like what seemingly happened there was she got cast in her box. And if you're not familiar with the term, you know, horses, you'll know horses when they roll. Sometimes when they roll in their box, they roll into the wall and they kind of get jammed, and that sometimes they can get a bit panicked and do themselves harm. And that's seemingly what has happened here. So this is something that could have happened at any time, whether she was in training or in the breeding paddocks. Just horrendous luck. And you'd just feel so sorry for her connections, because they, you know, as well as her being a brilliant filly, weren't they brilliant owners? You know, they really raced her. And let her do her thing. It would have been very easy to retire her there and to the breeding paddocks like a couple of years ago. And they kept going. They enjoyed her. They took her around the world. They let her do her thing, enjoy herself. And they were going to do so again this year. So you hate to see such kind of game campaigning and ambition end like this. But look, it's no one's fault. It's just sickener for all concerned, you know, trainer, owner, jockey, the whole team there at the Quins, a real sickener. So, yeah, what can you say? Only to give your commiserations and remember her on her best days, because there was plenty of them.
Absolutely. She was really like, that's the advert for racehorse ownership right there, because the Fairley family, like, I saw them traveling to the Breeders' Cup, obviously. And, you know, they're there with John Fairley's daughters, and then their kids as well. So all the grandchildren involved, and the thrill they got off this mare. I mean, like, memories for a lifetime. So I'm sure they will cherish them, but it is a very sad end. And on that note, we have to bring this show to an end, boys. Thank you very much, as always, Kevin Blake, Brendan Duke. I will be back with Racing Only Better on Thursday this week, so tune into that, looking ahead to the weekend's action, as always. But for now, listeners, viewers out there, thank you very much for joining us. Have a good week. Enjoy yourselves and join us again on Thursday.